Transition Radio from San Diego, exploring the world of change with you. Are you ready to take your life to a new level? Join transition coaches and best-selling authors Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster as they explore strategies to navigate changes in health, relationships, money, career, and so much more. Get the information and tools to make your life smoother, easier, and more productive. And now, your hosts, Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster.
And welcome to Transition Radio. So glad to have you here with us this evening.
Boy, am I excited about this show today, Paula.
Me too, me too. It's an important show for so many reasons that affects, and a really important reason, addiction, that affects so many families.
You know, it does affect so many families. And, you know, when we're talking about addiction, we're talking about chronic brain diseases, which they've been called, right? And, you know, addictions are permeating our country. And there's no social, economic, spiritual, racial, or any other segment of our society that it's not touching today. In fact, according to Psychology Today, substance abuse is as great a challenge as any of the clinical issues that have emerged over the past decades. Addictive illnesses is among the most prevalent psychiatric disorders. And in America, approximately 15% of the population, or 60 million people, are addicted to alcohol, and 6% for other drugs. So the cost of all this, it's horrific. Mental illness combined is costing this country $129 billion a year. Imagine what we could be doing with that money if we weren't having to focus on addictive behaviors. So that's what the show is about. We're going to be talking some amazing guests that are coming on our show today. But you know, Paula, you are an addictive therapist. You have a lot of background in this.
Addictive because people get crazy about me and just keep wanting to come back.
That's
or an
that's
addiction.
Right. Oh, and you have an addiction to people coming back? No. Okay. So
I do work with addictive disorders. Yes.
You do. Yeah.
But I kind of like that. The addictive therapist.
The addictive therapist.
The maybe one you can't stop coming to.
Maybe we can rebrand you. And I love bringing humor in this because it's a heavy subject. So
it is a heavy subject.
It's good to bring humor in.
We have to have humor. And you know, one of the things I wanted to mention about the statistics that you were talking about, Ken, very often other mental disorders co-occur with alcoholism or drug addiction, like depression, like anxiety, like phobias. You know, a lot of times, in fact, I remember when I was doing my internship, the first client I ever worked with told me that one day he'd been on the streets of Hanoi in the Vietnam War, and the next day he was on the streets of San Francisco. No debriefing, no counseling, no anything. So, needless to say, he suffered from alcoholism, addiction to Xanax, and he had a depression, extreme depression. That's why he was in the hospital program trying to get clean.
Wow. Well, you know what I love about Transition Radio and the show that we're doing today is that we're not only going to be talking about addiction and addictive behavior and what's going on. We're going to be talking about some of the causes behind it. Mm-hmm. We're going to also be talking about some of the cures that can actually take place. In fact, with neuroscience, with new therapies that I personally hadn't heard of, and I'm pretty immersed in this field, but in doing the research, we've got some new ways to heal these challenges in America. So I'm really excited to get into the show.
I am too. And I mean, you know, last week we talked with Mark Waldman, who is doing a lot of neuroscience research. So I was delighted to see neuroscience is improving the recovery statistics for addiction as well. That's really cool.
That is really cool. And, you know, I think we ought to bring on our first guest. I think
let's get right into
this.
Jody Prowse is a wife, a mother, author, and an advocate to help eliminate the shame and stigma surrounding addiction and mental illness. She's also about empowering women through their journey of family crisis. She's written the book, The Sun Is Gone, A Sister Lost in Secrets, Shame, and Addiction, and How I Broke Free. So welcome, Jody. We are so excited to have you with us today and so excited to be bringing our listeners this very important information.
Thanks, Paula and Ken. I am very grateful to be here.
So tell us, why did you write The Sun Is Gone, which I believe is your story, your own personal story, right, Jody?
It is. And, you know, at first my motivation was probably quite the opposite. I thought I was writing my brother's journey of alcoholism. Mm-hmm. It's on so many branches of my family tree, but he became so addicted that I didn't think anyone would believe that alcohol could do this. But, you know, as the years progress and I can now sit back, it is my story after all. And, you know, we concentrate, I think, so much on recovery and people can recover and what you need to do to recover. I just really believe that maybe we could also concentrate on some of the things that have went wrong and learn from those lessons as well. Mm-hmm. And so that really is my motivation for telling my story, to help other families that are going through this same thing.
So what was the family dynamic that created, that you think contributed to your brother's alcoholism?
You know, I didn't, it seems perplexing to me that, you know, through 6 years of with him on this journey and all the help and the rehabs and the therapists and the counseling, that I think we missed the most important component. And he was always just told, concentrate on the stop drinking, instead of really digging deep and knowing now in 2017 that trauma and some of the things that we see in early childhood can actually lead to things you talked about earlier, anxiety and depression, mm-hmm. more severe mental health issues. And, you know, we came from an alcoholic home, and my brother and I witnessed violent fighting and yelling and screaming and having to flee the house in the middle of the night. And I do think that those are the things that actually changed both of us forever. And for him was maybe the beginning of his problems in his teenage years.
You know, I think that it's my personal belief, Jody, that most addictions, most addictive behavior is actually what we have referred to in grief work as a grief avoidance response mechanism. Because what happens so often is loss occurs, just like you described, alcoholism with your parents and fighting and all of that trauma in childhood. And when do you get to heal that? You know, usually as children, we aren't getting the counseling to help us heal. And then we discover a behavior or a substance that helps us feel a little bit less of the emotional pain, and we get addicted to that relief, that way of avoiding our pain for a while.
And that exactly what you just said, for a while. That does work, doesn't it? Having a couple cocktails. And, you know, when my brother started experiencing these feelings, he didn't know what it was. And why? Because families don't talk about it. And certainly, you know, families where it is generational and you could have an open dialogue and to make us aware. And so, you know, I always say when people say this was a choice, you know, what was my brother guilty of? Being a teenager and struggling and taking those first drinks in high school like almost every one of our children do.
Mm-hmm.
It did take away all those feelings for a while. And, you know, my brother was only 2 years old when we experienced some of these things. And so he didn't really have the consciousness to remember. But I think he felt those effects later in life.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the thing we miss. And I so agree with you, because so many doctors and therapists also do believe that that is where addiction stems from. And, you know, I want to always say, this isn't about blaming parents, but we need to acknowledge past mistakes and in order to heal and in order to change, that it isn't continuing generation after generation any longer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think an important point to bring up, because probably some of our listeners are going, well, she went through the same thing he did. Why did he become an alcoholic and she didn't? What do you think about that, Jody?
Very valid point. But first, we're all individuals. We all respond to different things in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I am older, and so I was able to understand a little bit more of what was going on. But I also changed in a different way. I became the caretaker for my family. I became, I had to look after my little brother, and I felt responsible for him my whole life. It changed, shaped my personality. I became strong and stoic and loud. He became the opposite of that. And I think at the end of the day, as our whole life, goes through its stages, I became addicted to my brother.
Well put.
That's
well
interesting. Put. Yeah. So how does that show up when you say that you became addicted to your brother?
Yeah. It was a 12-year battle with my brother with alcoholism. And I think it's important to share with everyone. Unfortunately, he did lose his battle in March of 2012. But about halfway through, 6 years, I dedicated my whole life into saving him. And, I sacrificed my husband, my marriage, my health, my own well-being of my own children. And through therapy myself, and it wasn't until years later when I really realized how our child impacted me. And that is why I made those unhealthy choices, because I did feel responsible, for that little two-year-old boy that grew into a man.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they say that the alcoholic's addicted to the alcohol and the codependent is addicted to caretaking. And I think this would be a wonderful thing to get into a little bit more, Jody, when we come back from our break in just a moment.
We'll be back with Transition Radio and your hosts, Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster. Would you like to help someone in need to move from poverty to prosperity? Stars of Courage, a 501c3 nonprofit, is looking for established life coaches with experience in education and career mentorship to build confidence and create clear paths to success. Join our team of experienced coaches in a wide variety of fields, equipped with warm hearts with a passion for lifting up those in need. Our Stars of Courage. Find out how you can make a difference at starsofcourage.org. That's starsofcourage.org.
We're back with Transition Radio, exploring the world of change. And now, here's your hosts, Paula Shaw and Ken D. Foster.
Welcome back to Transition Radio, where today we are addressing the issues of addiction in America. We're talking with Jody Prowse. Jody has a new book out called The Sun Is Gone. And Jody, we were just talking about how you got addicted to taking care of your brother. So what behaviors showed up in your life as a result of that?
Oh, just every minute of every day was consumed with trying to save him. And so everything that goes with that, and I think so many people can understand what that is like. And I wasn't going to work, and I was losing weight, and I was letting my children see things, I think, far worse than we ever witnessed as children, mm-hmm. even though I knew that was wrong. But I just, when you are propelled by love and your heart's just trying to pull you in one direction, and, it was 6 years, and finally I was just at my breaking point. Everything was deteriorating around me. My brother wasn't changing. I thought he was going to die. And so that's when I finally went for help. But I stopped asking what I needed to do for my brother, and I started asking what I needed to do for me.
And, that's such a huge piece right there, Jody. And it seems to be particularly difficult for women because we're the nurturers, right? We're the ones that are supposed to take care of the family. And in it, so often we lose sight of the fact that we're actually supposed to be taking care of ourselves, and we get preoccupied with this care of the other person. We're so sure if we love them enough, we can fix them, or if they love us enough, they'll finally hear what we're saying. But it doesn't work exactly that way, does it?
It doesn't work that way, and it is a painful realization to have to come to terms with. But how do you look after someone else when you're so unhealthy yourself? And mm-hmm. I finally realized that. And, you know, I really believe now that sometimes the word no can be the kindest, most compassionate gift we can give our loved one and ourselves. And it just doesn't feel like that because we feel like we're deserting someone. We feel like we're a failure.
Oh, yeah, the guilt.
And then the guilt, the shame, the remorse when you see them go back out and go down that destructive path. And you feel, isn't there that there's a sense that you should have done something?
Mm-hmm. And always underlying all of that, the person you love more than anything in this world could die.
Right.
Yes.
But it is those feelings that really need to be all brought in together to really have you do the strong and right thing. And it is by allowing them the ability to stand on their own 2 feet and change.
And boy, that's tough, especially for mothers. I mean, you know, you in a way were like your brother's mother. But I know I have worked with mothers whose kids are addicted. And knowing your child is living on the street or not knowing where they're living, you know, closing that door to having those boundaries, the, you know, that sort of tough love thing, it's so agonizing for people who care about the other person.
It is, but as long as you, you know, I know we use the enabling word, but as long as you're doing those things and keeping the patterns the same and really helping them for this to progress.
Mm-hmm.
I see that now. I was doing some things to help my brother along, and so he didn't have to change. And I think a lot of our family members were doing those things, and mm-hmm. so that's where the whole family needs help. You know, we concentrate so much on the one that's addicted. They're sick. They, you know, it's not us. No, I think it's the whole, a lot of times it's the whole family.
Was your whole family able to get some relief, get some help prior to your brother passing, or did that happen?
No, unfortunately, I think a lot of times with this journey, it's very hard on the family, and ours would be a case where we didn't stay aligned as a family. There was a lot of blame and blame shifting instead of focusing, you know, on the problem, which was alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Our family members started turning on each other. And, you know, when I still remember when I had to draw that healthy boundary with my brother in November of 2006, and to my mom and sister at the time, it meant I was abandoning my brother and deserting my family. And so that was, you know, the beginning of the end of those relationships.
You know, I have a friend that went through a similar situation. And, you know, to this day, there's family conflict and blame and you know, guilt around the passing of the young man. So I think this is kind of typical in a lot of families. So how do we heal that, Jody?
What was the turning point for you, Jody? What was the most powerful thing that helped you start prioritizing taking care of yourself and disengaging from this codependent behavior?
Two things, I think. One, I was 39 years old sitting in a therapist's office. And like I said, I'm like, I don't want to talk about my brother. It's about me. When he just said, Jody, you're not responsible for their lives. And that meant my brother, my sister, and my mom, who I had just, since I was a little girl, felt responsible. And, you know, it took me a long time to break free from that. I mean, I'm still a work in progress because those are patterns embedded of you for so many years.
Absolutely.
But the other thing, I think the most important thing for people is to really come to terms with your own story and the truth. And that's what I had to do. And I had to look back to our whole childhood and unravel why all of this had possibly happened. And I decided to change and make a better life for myself, my husband, my children. And so I broke free from that.
Do you look back today and see the gift in going through this? You know, I know you played a role as the codependent, but playing that role, can you look back? Are there some gifts of gratitude that you learned or grew out of this?
I am a better person because I was my brother's sister, and I wouldn't change. And there were some unbelievable things that happened, and, you know, not unlike other families. I wouldn't change any of that. I would do things differently. And so I do, I look at it as a gift to other people. That's why I share my story. But I look at it as a gift to my family members now, my little nieces, my own sons, the children that will come after us, that I really want our own family to share in this story so that there isn't another alcoholic in our chain, in our family tree.
Mm. Oh, Jody, that is so powerful. And I have to say, you know, it brings up something in me because my former husband was an alcoholic. And the gift in that, you know, after all the years of struggle and doing a lot of what you did, thinking I could inspire him to change and all that, I realized it was his alcoholism that led me to doing this work that I do today. I would never have done it had it not been for attending the spousal part of the recovery program and realizing that I love this counseling thing. And then I went back to school. And so it ended up being a huge gift in helping me find who I came here to be. But in the moment, when we're in the pain, we don't see that so clearly, do we?
You don't. And that's what I say now, because I do talk to people who do lose their loved ones. And they are still, they're in anger and blame and shame and grief and all those things. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you can turn that around. And by helping other people and talking about your loved one, even though they didn't win their battle.
Mm-hmm.
But to help other people, it really does fill that hole left in your heart.
Mm. That's beautiful.
And we can concentrate on the negatives, can't we? Or we can wake up and go, no, I can't change it, but I'm going to make something good of it. And it so helps in the healing process.
Jody, how can we get society and healthcare workers to be a little less judgmental, a little more compassion with the addicts and the people with the mental illnesses and their families? You know, how can we eliminate that stigma?
Oh, I just did a speech on that last week. I love that.
Perfect
question.
Timing then.
It is perfect timing because I told the story that my little niece in grade six, they had to do an oral report, and my 11-year-old niece picked alcoholism.
Mm.
And I thought, oh my gosh, I hope that teacher knows how brave that little girl is.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
I think by talking to our little children, not teenagers, it's too late, by talking openly and honestly, especially if it runs in our family, about mental illness and addiction starting at a very young age, those children are going to grow up to be better doctors and nurses and psychologists, and they will make a difference. And
Jody, you have made such a huge difference today, and what you have shared with us has been so powerful. How can people find your book, and what is your website?
Absolutely. Well, you can get it at Amazon.com. And it's called The Sun Is Gone, A Sister Lost in Secrets, Shame, and Addiction, and How I Broke Free, or on my website at jodeprouse.com, JodeeProuse.com.
And your message, I think, just to reiterate two of the most important things, talk about it. You know, they used to say in program, we're as sick as our secrets. Talk about it and be of service to others. And that is certainly what you have done, Jody.
Boy,
thank
isn't that
you
the truth.
So much.
Thank you, Jody, so much for being here with us. We really appreciate it. And again, that website is jodeprouse.com, JodeeProuse.com. We'll be right back with our call-in, who is a fella that has lived with addiction for many, many years. He's been sober now for 20 plus years, I believe, and he's going to give us some real insight onto some of the tools for recovery.
We'll be back with Transition Radio and your hosts, Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster.
Baby boomers, are you prepared? In a recent study from Transamerica, 45% of baby boomers are expecting a financial decrease in their standard of living after retirement. If you live into your 90s, you can go without a paycheck for 30 years. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton from Sexton Advisor Group. With almost 20 years in the business, I can answer your retirement questions. Get your complimentary retirement guide by calling 1-800-560-2611. That's 1-800-560-2611. Or go to SextonAdvisorGroup.com. That's S-E-X-T-O-N advisorgroup.com.
Is living in today's fast-paced world making you feel stressed and out of balance? Are anxiety, sleeplessness, depression, lack of focus, or weight gain robbing you of your relationship and your energy? If you're ready for change, you need to call Paula Shaw at Rebalancing You. Paula helps you identify and eliminate self-sabotaging thinking and behavior. Using a wide variety of mind-body techniques, she provides her clients with the most effective processes for their specific needs. To book a rebalancing session with Paula, call 858-480-9234. That's 858-480-9234.
We're back with Transition Radio, exploring the world of change. And now, here's your hosts, Paula Shaw and Ken D. Foster.
And welcome back to Transition Radio. We are talking about addiction in America today, and we just spoke with Jody Prowse, who wrote a book called The Sun Is Gone. And now we have with us a live guest. Ken, tell us who we've got. I mean, a phone live. Well, he is live, isn't he?
We have a live guest.
Are you
alive,
Joe?
They're alive today. I think he's alive.
I certainly hope so.
That's great. Joe is a personal friend of mine. I've known him for many, many years. And Joe is a man that I know has fought with addiction, overcome his demons, and lives a great life today as a result of doing the work he needed to do. So I thought you'd be an ideal guest on this show, Joe, to just tell a little bit about maybe where you were in the beginning and a little bit about what happened and what's going on today.
Well, Kim, my story's like a lot of kids that grew up in an alcoholic home, alcoholic father. I felt uncomfortable in my own skin. You know, I became shy, had low self-esteem, and I just felt like I wasn't like all the other kids. And eventually, I went away to college, got a couple of degrees, got married, had a couple of kids, and I became successful, was president of three national companies. And everybody felt I was Mr. Wonderful, but I wasn't. I was messed up inside. I didn't feel like I felt like everybody else had life figured out but me. And then I discovered that alcohol gave me a fix. It gave me the confidence. It removed those feelings of inadequacy, and it just became my best friend. It was always there for me. It was my best pal, alcohol. And eventually, it quit working, like it does for a lot of people. And I started to miss work, started dreaming up excuses, yada, yada, yada. And I tried to quit. I realized it was a problem, and I tried to quit, but I couldn't. I just couldn't. And I had to have my alcohol, and I got depressed. The more I tried to quit, the worse I felt, and I just went into that downward spiral that a lot of us go into with alcohol. And I eventually just thought my life was over and I'd be better off dead.
Joe, ask you a question, Joe. Did you we were talking about with our other guest, and a lot of times I know alcohol comes from comes from childhood traumas or traumas in the military or things that people just don't want to deal with, and so they're kind of buried. Did you experience that at all for yourself?
Well, I think the trauma of growing up in an alcoholic home, I never knew whether my dad was going to come home sober or drunk, and I couldn't invite friends into my home, and it shut me off from my friends to a certain extent, and I began to feel different, and So I think that's what really started it all happening, Ken.
And did you say, Joe, that you actually reached a point where you didn't want to live anymore?
I had no joy in my life. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a good husband. I wasn't a good father. I wasn't really doing anything, you know, outwardly to harm anyone or hurt anyone. I just felt like a loser.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't quit. And, you know, I had no self-esteem.
So how did you...
I know you because I know that you didn't lose everything. A lot of people lose a lot of, you know, they lose cars and houses and wives and all.
No.
You didn't lose anything. So you're kind of an anomaly. Or maybe not.
High bottom.
Maybe not. Mm-hmm. High bottom, yeah.
Well, you know, Ken, that's a good point. Everybody thinks that alcoholics are guys that go to sleep in the gutter with a jug of wine tucked under their arm, but a lot of alcoholics, man, we're out there, we're successful, we're smiling, we're driving nice cars and have pretty wives, but we're just dying inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so is the family, right? That's one of the things we've been talking about in our earlier segments. It's so hard on the family. As you were sharing, too, with you grew up with an alcoholic dad.
Yeah, I did. And I was lucky. I married a very patient, loving wife that was very giving and caring. And I was pretty good at hiding it, you know. I mean, I tried not to drink around the kids. And, you know, that makes you even feel worse about yourself. You start sneaking around and you start snipping drinks. You hide it in places in the house. And all that just rips away your self-esteem.
Yes.
It's just awful. Yeah.
So how did you finally get sober, Joe?
Well, I had a friend. I think he's sitting next to you. Came by my house one day. He looked at my bloodshot eyes and he looked at my ruddy face and he said, "Have you ever thought about quitting drinking?" And I, in a moment of clarity, I said, "Yeah, I've thought about it a lot, Ken, but I can't quit." And he said, "You know, well, there's a solution." And I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, it's a 12-step program." And just quickly, I went to the 12-step program, and I found, and I think this is a very profound discovery for me, I found in the 12-step program that there were many people exactly like me that had experienced the same thing. And what I found out was that I wasn't a bad person. I was a sick person.
Yes.
I was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And it took a 1,000-pound monkey off my back, and it just really freed me to work the steps of the program and to follow the rules, and that was 19 years and 5 months ago, and I haven't had a drink since.
Wow, that's great, Joe. Congratulations on that.
Mm,
and
beautiful.
You know, you give a lot of people inspiration and hope. I want to, you know, I know that you still, you know, it's progress, not perfection, right? You're a work in progress, and I know everything is not perfect in your life, but, you know, you do have a very rich life today.
I do. You know, the thing I found, Ken, that, as I said, I wasn't a bad person. I was just a sick person. But I also found how to deal with life, and I found that there's no problem in life that alcohol will make better. It will always make it worse. And I almost died 7 years ago. I had a bad infection and they gave me a 30% chance of living, but I was sober, and I've had 20 cancer surgeries and I'm sober and I keep on keeping on. And I love life. I love my life and I know how to deal with it now. Sure, I make mistakes. I make a lot of them, but it's sure not because of alcohol.
Joe, there's probably a lot of people hearing your words right now who are thinking what you thought. I can't do it. Yeah, I'd like to. I'd like it to be different, but I can't. What would you say to them?
I would say to reach out to a 12-step program. There are a number of good ones around. The one I used was Alcoholics Anonymous. There's numbers, there's phone numbers, any directory, the internet, but find a number and just make a call. If you're really serious about quitting, and somebody will call you and talk to you and get you to a meeting. I read probably 25 or 30 self-help books, and they were worthless. I don't think I finished but about one or two. Mm-hmm. You got to have help, and you have to make a commitment.
Do you think you could have done it on your own?
No, I tried. I failed. I failed for 25, 30 years to do it on my own.
Is that a common lament in 12-step programs?
Oh, yeah, I think it is. And not everybody has the success I had in the program. I was just lucky.
Yeah.
A lot of people go into 12-step programs and have a hard time, and they go in and out of the program. But not everybody. Yeah. And
yeah. Because I want to put that out there. I mean, there are a lot. I'm glad you talked about the 12-step programs. There's also a lot of new things coming online right now. Mm-hmm. There's things such as, network therapy, where they're getting the family and friends involved in counseling on an ongoing basis. There is neurotherapy, where we're really learning how to tap into the deeper recesses of the mind and really change the subconscious mm-hmm. mind through therapies like emotional freedom technique. There's a course for some people, they might need anti-abuse or some of the drugs that'll help them, stay off the alcohol long enough to get sober. And of course, like you said, Joe, there's a lot of recovery programs out there. AA, Narcotics Anonymous. There's hospital programs, spiritual therapy, behavioral therapy. There are a lot of ways. But I think the reason I asked you is if you could do it alone. Because I have a personal belief that nobody can do it alone. You've got to have that support group around you.
And let me interrupt you. I bet a lot of those programs have one common thread, and that is that they show a person the way. They show them that they're not bad, that they're not losers. Mm-hmm. They show them that they're good people. They just have a problem, and they need some help.
And, I think at the core of all of this is the word love. And in a lot of research that was done, they said that no matter what the program, that the most important factor was that the person trying to get clean and sober believed that there was at least one significant person in their life who cared whether or not they made it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Joe, we're out of time. We're out of time, my friend. And I just really thank you for coming on the show and giving some inspiration, some hope. And hopefully we've got a few people listening going, it's time for me to do something about this. I'm ready to take the next step.
Oh, I hope so.
Well, Ken, I love you. You saved my life. Thank you. Thank you.
You saved your own life, brother. But I love you too, man.
And so glad to have had you on today, Joe. I'm so happy to have met you and bless you and your wonderful life. Thank you. Share.
And we'll be right back. Coming up in our next segment, we have Smart Money with Steve Sexton. I can hardly wait to see what Steve talks about today with this show.
I know. Hopefully I won't cry through that
segment. Okay, we'll be right back.
We'll be back with Transition Radio and your hosts, Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster.
There's a question many of us ask ourselves when we are grieving. When will this pain ever end? Life transition coach and grief recovery specialist Paula Shaw wants you to know there is light at the end of the tunnel. In her new best-selling book, Paula gives you information and practical exercises you can use right away in your recovery process, including breathing methods, the emotional freedom technique, energy psychology work, and many other healing tools. Grief, when will this pain ever end? Available now on Amazon.com.
We're back with Transition Radio, exploring the world of change. And now, here's your hosts, Paula Shaw and Ken D. Foster.
And welcome back to Transition Radio. We are here today talking about addiction in America and how it affects the families particularly. And right now, this is our Smart Money segment with our favorite financial advisor, Steve Sexton of the Sexton Advisory Group. our sponsors.
Well, thanks for having me here.
Oh, Steve, we're always thrilled to have you here. And I, you know, in our discussion earlier, we talked a little bit about how does addiction affect us financially? Mm-hmm. And it sure can in so many ways. We've all heard the nightmare stories of people who've lost their whole fortune to one addiction or another. But one of the things I was sharing with the audience earlier is it's my belief that people getting involved in addictive, self-destructive behavior as a subconscious way of trying to soothe some kind of pain. So, you know, both of our guests today shared their troubled childhoods with alcoholic parents, all those losses, all that pain that went down in childhood. And you were sharing a story with me that I'd love you to share with our listeners.
Yeah, you know what? Just on Saturday, I was talking with another financial advisor friend of mine, and we were having a discussion about a particular client. Mm-hmm. She, you know, had a strained relationship with her daughter, and when her husband passed away, she, you know, after the funeral and all that, she bought her daughter, who had this strained relationship, an $80,000 car, and then proceeded to withdraw the money and would go to the casinos and gamble and continue to gamble.
And finally, this was her inheritance money?
This is what was left over for their retirement and everything. Oh. And she just, you know, we had multiple conversations with her, but she just kept going at it. And, you know, it was IRA money. So she was losing almost half of it in taxes.
Ooh,
and when it got down to the point where we said, you know, we have $250,000 left, we had had a conversation with her. Hey, look, you know what? You've gone through this. You're not listening to us. You know what? We're going to have to let you go as a client. But you know what? As you said, she was using that addiction of gambling and trying to appease her daughter that she had a strained relationship with money. And it was just grinding away things.
Yeah.
And you know what? I see it from time to time with families who have kids that, you know what, they might be 50, but when they started with their drug habit, they started it in their 15, 16, 17, mm-hmm. and they finally got sober in their 30s. And you know what? You add money stress to that. In some cases, I've seen people who've actually killed themselves with inheritance because they don't know how to handle it and deal with the fact that mom and dad have walked out on life.
Exactly.
Because they just don't have that support anymore.
You know, and one of the points you make that's so good, I was reading in the research that one of the reasons we're all really kind of hardwired for addiction is because that when a behavior or a substance gets associated with the pleasure reward center of our brain, then the brain turns on to that. It's like, things aren't good. I'm in pain. My husband just died. I'm hurting. So what do I do to feel better? And in the case of this woman you're talking about, that became associated with gambling. And that maybe momentary thrill that felt good when she won, but the downside, and this is what our guests have shared today too, the downside can become so hugely problematic.
Well, I want to speak to that also. I want to say this, that because I think what Steve just was talking about is her thinking wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens with addiction, right? We can see this with neuroscience. We can see this with the brain scans, is that it actually shuts down the brain. You can see a live brain, you know, with all the activity in the brain, and when somebody's using substance for a period of time, it actually shuts down the brain. There's mm-hmm. black spots in the brain mm-hmm. that you can actually see.
Right.
So the thinking isn't even right. So that's.
And when we talk about that thinking, depending on when the addiction was, mm-hmm. in many cases, well, the emotions and the thought process of that is when they were going through the addiction. And that might be 16, 17, 21, 22,
right.
25.
Right.
Which, so you that's know, what they have to work with now, that level of emotional development.
Yeah, in addiction communities, a lot of times you'll hear that a person, whatever the age is that they started the addiction, that's their emotional age.
Right.
So if you start that addiction at 15 years old and now the person's 35, you're still dealing emotionally with a 15-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that make sense?
Oh, totally, totally, mm-hmm. totally.
And that's exactly what you were saying.
Yeah, you know what? One of the clients that we, they're still a client, but basically what the parents did was they set it up to where he would receive a certain amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
This certain amount of money wouldn't make him wealthy, too comfortable, but it also kept him away from having issues that he had to deal with.
Right.
Yeah. And was great until he got more money and went, what do I do?
Mm-hmm. That's a hard thing for a parent to deal with. Let's say, you know, you've got a large estate and now you want to, you know, give your children and grandchildren, let's say, a part of that. How do you set that up, Steve? So just that situation comes up. I mean, do you give them, you don't let them come in till they're 35 to get the money, or do you set up a situation where people, and I'm just making this up, they can, the three eldest in the family can vote on if this person has an addiction or something, we're not going to give them the money for another 5 years. How do you do that?
Well, let's talk about the first part. When do they get the money? Mm-hmm. In many cases, most parents are realizing that, you know what, for example, my son's 18, okay? His whole life has been mom and dad the bank. And it will be like that until he gets out of college and then we kick him out, okay?
Right, right.
See ya.
What's your son's name? And he's, I hope you're listening.
No, you know, that's the gist of it. But you know what? The reality, he's got, you know what? We've paid enough. He's got to make his own way. You know what? We have arranged inside of our trust to where our kids will not be receiving anything until they're in their 30s. Why? Because they've got to fight a little bit. They've got to appreciate things
I
a little bit.
That.
They got to screw up, make bad decisions, and get punched in the mouth. All that stuff's got to occur. Because if it doesn't, you know what? Everything's happy-go-lucky, and you know what? They'll just go right through it thinking it'll be there tomorrow, and it won't.
It's like buying your child a BMW, a $50,000 BMW, when they first get their license, right?
Yeah.
What's going to happen?
You know what? I have friends from high school that are like that because I went to a private school, and some of those guys that had that, they're struggling. They might still have the cars, but they are all messed up.
And they don't get to learn how, first of all, you don't get to learn about your personal power, your ability to be able to walk out in the world and make a living yourself, you know, and stand on your own 2 feet. That's so important. I love what you're doing, Steve. You know, years ago, I used to be a location manager in the movie business, and I was scouting on the 17-mile drive in Monterey, some of the richest people in the world. And you know what I discovered? Most of those people who came from Crocker Bank and families with huge wealth lived in fear of losing their money because they'd never learned how to earn money.
Mm-hmm.
And if it goes away, they were fearful. What would they do? How would they ever get
more? Well, you know what? There's one client of mine who's a professional assistant to somebody that their family is actually one of the original founders of the Dow Jones. Okay.
Whoa.
Her grandfather left $500 million for her retirement, her estate. She's never worked a day in her life. She raises horses in Kentucky and all that kind of stuff, but she's got multiple addictions, alcohol, drugs, plastic surgery. Her life's a mess. But one of the things that her parents did is they set up a specific type of trust to where she could never have complete control. She's been married multiple times, and some of these guys have tried to get her to do invest their own thing and all that stuff so they can get more control, but they never can, okay? So when we talk about that, you say, hey, look, if I'm in an IRA or I have, you know, some people's whole family wealth is in an individual retirement accounts, it used to be a 401k. Now, they have specific beneficiaries, but you can set up an IRA inheritance trust, which will allow the taxes to flow through so there won't be tax issues. But it has a third party that's a custodian. So if somebody has substance abuse, they're a pushover for somebody to say, hey, can I borrow money? And you know what? Or they have that in-law that you just never treated your daughter or your son right, and you want, you know, hey, I don't want them to get anything. What it allows them to do is have this third party be that buffer between everybody that asks. And could be that safety net from that person hurting themselves with the money. So basically what they do is they typically just dole out so much money every single month, and they continue to do that. So that's one way. Other ways is by setting up specific trust or trust funds with banks as custodians with certain rules. So these are done from a legal standpoint. You can do them with other products, usually with the IRA custodian as a restricted beneficiary form. So if you have concerns like that, or you have somebody with substance abuse, or somebody who just has, I'm going to say, stability issues, because I know somebody who's just a pushover. If you said, hey, I've got, I want to sell you some ice. It's in Alaska. Let's, you know, let's go get you some.
She'll go,
well, how much? Cool. You know, I'll make $1 million, you know, and that's her.
Yeah.
But basically her parents have protected her from herself, and you can do those things with the right structure.
That's great.
And how do it sounds like you've done a lot of this work. And how do people get a hold of you, Steve?
Well, they can give us a call at the office at 1-800-560-2611. That's 1-800-560-2611. Or they can go to sextonadvisorygroup.com. And you know what? Just send us a little email and say, hey, we'd like some help, and we'll connect with you and see how we can help you out.
Steve, once again, golden advice. Thank you so much, because really you cut through a lot of confusion, I think, that I certainly had about what do you do? How do you protect yourself when addiction is on board?
Yeah, so you don't have to fear it anymore. Yeah. You have the advisor right here that can help you to step up and understand all the options and be able to make rational choices that will protect the family. And like you said, protect maybe somebody with an addiction or something from themselves until they can heal that addiction.
Let me add one last thing.
Yeah.
I have talked to people who we set this up for 8-10 years ago, and they were very upset. In fact, I had people spitting, screaming at me because I helped their parents set that thing up.
Oh.
But fast forward 8 years, I've gotten hugs because it was the best darn thing they ever been through. And they realized by setting those things up, they're still here today and they have a bountiful life.
And maybe we're more inspired to go into treatment and recover.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Right. Well, listen, Steve, thank you again for being on the show. Paula, great show. Another amazing show together. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I want to encourage all of our listeners to go to transitionradioshow.com. where you can download all of our past episodes. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of tips from Steve Sexton on the financial group that Sexton Advisory Group that you can tune into. And you can also listen to some amazing guests. So we hope you'll do that. We're also on iHeartRadio. We're on Blog Talk Radio. We're on 14 different podcast shows and 13 shows across the country. So we hope
we're ubiquitous.
Yeah. And, you know, come to our Facebook page and let us know how you like our show. If you like these kind of shows, let us know. So Transition Radio Show on Facebook, let us know how we're doing.
And if you listen to a podcast, please feel free to write a review.
There you go.
All right. We're looking forward to seeing y'all next week.
Next week.
Bye-bye.